Today's daf in Masechet Nazir, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Samach Hey, our penultimate daf. Whew. This is very, very dramatic. Oh my gosh. Anyway, we're going to be getting into some rather esoteric issues today, because we're continuing on with some of the elements of Tumah, where it isn't really centrally Nogeya, the sugya of Nazir, but the reason that we're bringing it here, at least what I suspect, is the reason that we're bringing it here is because the strange formulation of Raglayim Ladavar, which became operative in the context of a halacha l'meshe misinai, which is very strange, which is the din of Tumat HaTahom, and it became necessary for us to take into consideration the awareness that people have of the potentiality of the Tumah, and that changed the way that the halacha l'meshe misinai was applied, which is a very unusual situation. Today we're going to find that there's another element which we've discussed earlier in the Masechet, and that is the question of Shchunat Kvarot. Remember that we talked about the halacha l'meshe misinai that a mate who is chaser does not have the din of Rekev Hamid, and does not have the din of Shchunat Kvarot. We never got into the issue of Shchunat Kvarot, and today we're going to look at it and see that here too, Raglayim Ladavar becomes strangely important to us. So we're at the Halakha Mishnah at the bottom of Samach Daled Amud Beit. Hamotzei Meit Batchila. So now each one of these words we're going to see is important that it be exactly as it's written. So when it says mate, it means someone who had died from natural causes but had not been murdered, not harug. We'll see why that's important. It was important before for the din of Tumat HaTahom because if a person was murdered, then there's got to be somebody who knew about the murder, namely the murderer. And therefore, by definition, it cannot be Tumat HaTahom. Here, it's going to be Nogeya, the din of Shchunat Kvarot, but for a completely different reason. A mate, remember, that is Choser, is not given the din of Rekav HaMeit, and is not given the din of Shchunat Kvarot. And therefore, since in a typical case of murder, there will be loss of blood, so because of that, he would be considered to be a mate Choser, and therefore the dinim of Shchunat Kvarot would not apply to him. So the first word is mate. Mate is opposed to harug. Batachila. Batachila also means nobody knew that there was a kever in this area. So it's not as if it's known that someone was specifically buried here. We stumble over a kever. Now we don't know what that kever is, whether it's part, is it part of a graveyard? Is it someone that was buried here who had a right to be buried here? Did he pay for it? Is it a permanent kever? Was it meant to be permanent? And therefore, it really is a kever? Or was it a temporary thing where somebody had died and they temporarily buried the person where he died and intended to then reinter him in a family plot? But this is certainly not meant to be a permanent kever. We don't know. So we're talking about, therefore, batchila. Furthermore, mushkav, he has to be lying. Why lying? Because Jewish burial always buries a mace lying. Goyim used to have all of, as we know from archaeology, used to have all of these strange modalities of burial, where they would sit someone up and bury him, and all kinds of different minhagim. Or they might have buried him in a way that was not kidarko. Not kidarko was that goyim would sometimes put a skull between the thighs, which was the skull and crossbone symbol. And that was also only done by goyim. So therefore we have all of these tna'im before we could start talking about the halacha of Shchunat Kvarot. So the din over there is like this. If there's only a single mate, where we have all of these reasons to believe that he's Jewish, but at the same time do not have reason to believe that this was meant to be a permanent kever, and that he had a right to be buried here, and was kone makomo, or so on. So then the person who finds this kever in a field that he bought has the right to move this mate to a Beit HaKvarot. He's not mechuyev to allow a kever that did not have any kind of chazaka to be there forever. But when he moves the body, he has to also move the tfusa. And the tfusa means any of the dirt that is under and around the body that may have absorbed any kind of moisture or body fluids from the mate. And therefore, since that itself would be mechuyev kvura, so the person who's moving the body is chayev in kvurat hamate. So he has to take along the tfusa. The Gemara is going to define precisely what that shiur is. This is true even if you find two bodies, shnayim, not limotam ve'tfusatam. But the moment that you find three bodies, now we have to start worrying about this, because it's starting to look like this may be a place of burial. However, places of burial had a very particular pattern, and therefore we can actually check out and see whether we have grounds to believe that this is a place of burial. Now, place of burial is called a shchunat kfarot. It's a neighborhood for kfarot. And this was a very common way of burial in Eretz Yisrael, in which the burial was done initially in the ground, and then ultimately, because remember, there was no cooling, there was no morgue or anything, so they would immediately bury a mate, and then reinter the remains in a kuch. A kuch was a very standard way of kvura, in which a ma'ara, which was like a cave, was hollowed out, and then in the side of the ma'ara, they would put on all three sides, they would drill out kuchim. Kuchim are little niches, and in each niche, they would put remains inside. I'm sure all of you have been to places like this, like at Beit Shearim and so on. And they would make like a stone container for the remains, slide the container into the kuch, and then they would fill up one side, fill up the other side, and fill up the far side. Now, there was a standard way of doing this. What they would do was they would have the open space on each side, each of the three sides. On the two long sides, there would be four kuchim. On the shorter width side, there would be three kuchim. Outside of one of these ma'arot, there was what was known as the neighborhood park, which was the area between the two kuchim. That's called the chatzer. The chatzer was 6x6 amot, and then they would have a same pattern on the other side of the chatzer. What was also very common is that on one side, it was set aside for adult burial, and for the other side, it was set aside for infants and children. And you will recall, those of you who are insane anti-vaxxers, that before the vaccinations, the infant mortality was such that there was a need for far more children burial than for adult burial, because somebody could have 5 or 10 children and be lucky to have one or two survive. But that's because they weren't smart enough to be, you know, I mean, imagine if they had vaccinations when they had any children left. But anyway, so many have pointed out, any trip to a older graveyard will be proof enough of the efficacy of vaccinations. Anyway, so the idea over here is like this. This concept of a shchunat kvarot appears to be a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. And the dinim, where we need to worry about a shchunat kvarot, also are in terms of halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. And this accounts for the very strange fact that despite finding meitim that are buried in this pattern, if those three meitim, or one of those three meitim, was chaser and had been murdered or had been amputated, there's no din of shchunat kvarot, even though that is completely and totally unwarranted, logically, correct? So therefore, there's got to be a basis for the same din that we saw in the Mishnah earlier, that just like a mate which is chaser, the Zalach al-Moshe Mi-Sinai has no rekev hamate, so too a mate that's chaser is not mechayev you to worry that maybe this is a shkunat kvarot. If you have to worry that it's a shkunat kvarot, then we're talking about something more than just being choshet that these meitim were buried here permanently and therefore you're not allowed to move them. If you have a worry about a shkunat kvarot, then you have to start digging in a pattern that would be the same as the possible pattern of the shkuna. So in other words, once we've identified the shape, you'll see your shape in the Gemara, all Gemaras have usually a small diagram of some kind of a shkunat kvarot, or at least of one ma'ara. No? That's crazy. Does anybody have, wow, Alon says he doesn't have a picture. Does anyone have a picture that they could share? Get it? Okay, a little bit higher, a little bit, there we go. Oops, oh, no, you moved it out of the way. Nope, lower, up, you got it, but now, wait, oh, you're still going too low. What's going on? Up, there you are. Thank you. Okay, so there you have a shkunat kvarot. You'll see the chatzer in the middle, which is 6x6, and you see the two sets of kuchim, 8x4, but that's not really the case of our Gemara, because in our Gemara, we're talking about where one of them was smaller because it was made for children, and therefore it doesn't have an 8x4, it has a 6, which is going to account for the measurements that the Mishnah is going to give us. But in any event, thank you so much, Dr. Berry. So once we have that idea of chashash, not only for the fact that these are permanent graves, which therefore does not allow you to move them, but we also have the problem of the chashash that this is a shkunat kvarot, then you also have to check, and normally we have a concept of lo machzikin nisura. Unless we know, we don't go out of our way to find out that something is wrong. We're going to start looking around for a reason that it's going to be usher to dig up this field. But over here, we have this halacha that tells us that once we've identified the pattern of one of these me'arot, now we have to worry that maybe there's another one across the road, so to speak. We have to dig up, and the Gemara goes through elsewhere exactly how it is that we can dig up in the most efficient manner to make sure that there's no other kfarot in the area. So this is the din of shkunat kfarot. And what do you need to do? If it's a shkunat kvarot, you have to start checking. And therefore, you have to be bodek emenu v'lahalan. For 20 amot, you're going to have to go ahead and check the next direction, which would have matched this pattern, depending on where the feet of the metim are. You could figure out where it is that you are in your original ma'ara, and then figure out whether you're going to be able to hit another one of these ma'arot, and you have to go 20 amos in every direction where it might have been facing to the other direction. So basically, even though, I mean, really we're talking about normally 22 amot, but remember that the standard of the children, the standard was to have one for adults and one for children, and therefore for children only 6 amot, not 8 amot, was the normal size. So even though the bodies that we find may be adults, because we gave the shear of 4x8 and not by 6, but the facing Mara would have been made for children. So if you now will check 20 amot in all directions, you will stumble across additional graves if this is indeed a shkunat kvarot. So there you got to check. And then suppose you find another body within the 20 amot check. So then you're going to have to assume that, oh my gosh, so apparently this really is a shkunat kvarot. Then you're going to have to check yet another 20 amot from there. Botek heimenu l'alan esrim ama, sheraglayim ledavar. Now again, the words raglayim ledavar, we know, occurred in a very strange way in the Mishnah before. And the way that we understood it when it was nogea the din of Tumah Yedua, was that it meant that since the concept of Tumah Yedua versus Tumah Tahom is a question of consciousness, Raglayim Ladover means that there's an increased sensitivity and therefore a greater awareness of the potentiality of Tumas Hameis, in which case Tumas Tahom doesn't apply. In this case, on the surface, the din of Raglayim Ladover sounds like it's the typical use of Raglayim Ladover. We're being mechayiv you to be bodek because we have strong grounds to be bodek. That's the way most take it. I don't believe that that's the case at all. Raglayim Ladover in this case also means the same thing it meant as the halacha l'Moshe Sinai in terms of Tumah Yedua. Because as we just saw, the din of a mace that is chaser has got to be halacha l'Moshe Sinai, the same way the din of Rekev is halacha l'Moshe Sinai. In which case, Raglayim Ladover is irrelevant. Either this is a shchunat kvarot, and having identified the pattern, we're mechuyev to continue to check, or it's not. What does Raglayim Ladover have to do with it? So therefore, it appears to be that the application of how far we continue checking is actually a question of not the norms which we say, lo machzikina nisura. We don't go out of our way to create problems. So then that would mean the Raglayim Ladover is, since we still sense the possibility of this being a shkunat kvarot, that means that the din of Shkunat Kvarot, which is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, is still applicable in terms of the way that we view the suffix of Tumah. In the same way that the idea of Tumah Yedua versus Tumah Tahom is specifically a din in the suffix of Tumah. Okay, so there we have our din of Shkunat Kvarot and Ilu Techila Mitzaot. This is entirely a function of its being Raglayim Ladover. Because suppose we had stumbled over this single grave before. What would we have done? We would have moved it. Because we never would have begun with our problem of Shkunat Kvarot. And we could have simply taken it, notlo ve'et trusato. It's only because we've already found the Shkunat Kvarot that then our heightened sensitivity is mechayev us to take into consideration the din of Shkunat Kvarot yet one more step. Amar Rav Yehuda, I want you to be very careful about reading this Mishnah because every word makes a difference. The Mishnah started with the word matzah. Well, matzah means prat l'matsui. None of this is talking about where we knew about a kever. If we knew that this was a real grave that people had known about for many years and that it was actually created in the first place to be a grave, even if it's just a single grave, you can't move it. The only reason you're moving is because, well, I don't know if it was meant to be permanent and I don't know if anybody ever actually certified a grave here. Maybe someone stole the ground or whatever and so on. So once we've established that, what do you mean? This is the old grave. It's been here. This little marker has been here for centuries. You can't move that. So that's matzah. Mate. Mate means someone that died naturally. Not that he was murdered, because then he would be chaser. Mushkav means not if the mate was buried sitting. And kidarko means not a case where we have a skull and crossbones, which was all goyim, as we'll explain in a minute. Tani ula bar chanina, the reason that the mate that was a harug is the same thing as the reason that a mate who is chaser, we have a halacha that ein lo tvusa v'lo shkunat kvarot. It's as simple as that. And therefore, this must be based on not our stam chashashot, but on the halacha l'Moshe Misinai, which is part of the din of the Kavod HaMeit. And what about all of the other things about like lying straight or not having a head between the thigh? What about that? The Kolhani, my time alone? Why aren't they included? No, they're not included because we have a right to assume. Amrina Dilma Ovid Kochavimu. Remember, we saw that the Lashon of Chayshinan can also be used Lukula. This is the same idea. Dilma Ovid Kochavim. And again, remember that asserting problems where you don't know that there are problems is silly. Lo marzakina nisura. That's why most of these people running around and claiming bizayona mate and so on, they have no idea whether this was a place that was Jewish, not Jewish, that all of that is silly. Because chashinan, So Amrinan, Dilma Ovid Kochavim, Kashin Lakula. And if we have grounds to be Makel, we'll be Makel. Now, the Braita says like this. Matzah Shnaim, suppose you find two Meitim, and they're buried head to toe. So Rosh Hashazeh Bitzad Margalot Tafshazeh. Rosh Hashazeh Bitzad Margalot Tafshazeh. Jews don't bury in that fashion. And therefore, if it's Goyim, there's not only no problem of moving, which there's never a problem on only two unknown bodies, but they don't even have a din of tvusa. And if you find more, there's no problem of there being a, those two don't count towards the shkunat kvarot, because these are obviously not Jews. There's no din of tvusa for goyim. Matzah shlosha. Let's say that you found three mesim. One of them was Yadua. So there was one kever over here that was known from the while, and two of them were just discovered, or maybe it was the other way around. Maybe one was just discovered, and two of them are Yaduim. So that they're Jewish, of course they're Jewish, and therefore the correct yurisa is Yeshlem Tvusa. But Ein Lam Shkunat Kvarot. Now, what is the Seichel behind that, right? What's the difference whether we knew about one before? I mean, we're only allowed to move him because maybe we knew about him, but we didn't know that it was a real kever. And that's why you can move that one. So is there any kind of rhyme or reason to all of this? So Tosis brings two shitot. Tosis says, according to the Rashbam, there is no rhyme or reason. This is all part of the fact that the din of shkunat kvarot is halacha l'mashe Misinai, and was only given under those circumstances. Masha Enkein Tosis brings that the Ri says that there is logic behind this, and it's not necessarily given as part of the halacha, because it doesn't make sense to call something a shkunat kvarot in the event that one is known and the others aren't. Because if it really was a mokum that is meant for permanent burial, so then if we knew about one, why didn't we know about the others? That's the point. And so in that event, you're not going to say it's a shkunat kvarot unless you knew about all of these bodies, or unless you didn't know about all of these bodies. So then you could say that it was a shkunat kvarot and was meant to be there. But otherwise, it's very suspicious that in a supposedly public burial area, it was only known that there was one kever. Must be that maybe others were buried temporarily there because people knew there was a kever in the area. They never came back to reinter the meat. And fine, they intended to, all the best intentions, but it's not a pleasant duty. And therefore, they left the body there. There was a maaseh, Barabi Yeshevav, once happened actually, that he was bodek, and he found Shnayim Yaduim V'Echad Techila. So Rabbi Yeshevav, he took the approach that we should look for trouble. So he knew that there was a kever there, and he wanted to go and check further and see, maybe there are other bodies. If I know that there were two kvarot, so maybe there are other bodies also. Sure enough, he found that there were three bodies. So now he wanted to turn it into a shkunat kvarot and go all the way. Omar lo Rabbi Akiva, you might enjoy digging, but all of your trouble is a bunch of worthless time. You could have gone to the gym instead. Koshi agata lorik yagata. All of this work was for nothing except your cardio. Because lo amru shkunat kvarot ela l'shlosha yiduin or l'shlosha techila. You cannot create a problem of shkunat kvarot by discovering an additional kever. That's not going to make any difference, my dear sir. And therefore, he didn't go along with Rabbi Yeshevav. Then the halacha is the next step in the Mishnah. Once we've established that you can move these meitim, you have to move them together with their tfusa. Where does that come from? Hechi dami tfusa. The lashon of hechi dami is not a normal lashon. It's more a Yerushalmi lashon. Where exactly is this from? It doesn't mean that this is, give me an example of tfusa. So hechi dami tfusa. Omer of Yehuda, well, Yaakov Avinu says to his children that he wants, it's just Yosef from this pasuk, unasatani mi mitzrayim, ukvartani bikvuratam, right? So this is satani mi mitzrayim. is a lashon of mi Mitzrayim. I mean, obviously, where else are you going to take him from? But nisatani mi Mitzrayim means take some of Mitzrayim with me. Nisatani together with Mitzrayim is what he means. So in other words, in the event, obviously in the end, this wasn't necessary because Yaakov was never buried in Mitzrayim and Yosef was able to get him out before he was interred in Mitzrayim at all. But in the event that I'm buried in Mitzrayim, then when you reinter me, take some of Mitzrayim with me. And that would be the shear of Tvusa. And how much is that? V'kama shear Tvusa? Here, somebody got very mixed up and put in Rebbe Elazar ben Tzaddik because they got mixed up with the Braisa later. That is Rebbe Elazar ben Tzaddik, but this has nothing to do with Rebbe Elazar ben Tzaddik. This is, Rebbe Elazar ben Tzaddik was a Tana. This is Rebbe Elazar. So Pirish Rebbe Elazar in the Sugya, meaning in Amora, notel afatichoach, any of the dirt that's previously been dug, so it's soft. That's called afatichoach. Plus, you dig an additional 3-finger depth into karka betula that doesn't seem to have been dug into before. This is hard ground. And that would be the total. Meitve, but in the Braita, which is Rebbe Elazar ben Tzaddik, doesn't say a word about this business about digging shalosh etzba'ot. So how is Rebbe Elazar, the Amora, how is he possibly arguing on the Tana? Right? This is Rebbe Elazar ben Pedas. How is he arguing on Rebbe Elazar ben Tzaddik? Because the Braita has Rebbe Elazar ben Tzaddik saying the shear of Tfusa is notela takismin vetakisasot. Look, you definitely have to include in the Tfusa any kind of wood chips that are found there, apparently from decayed coffin, or kisasot, or any type of earth that is clumped up, because some moisture has made it clump, apparently. So there we say that was definitely had in it liquid from the mate. Zoreket avadaim, anything that's definitely not from the mate, like screws, nails, or whatever, that had fallen in from the box, if there was a box. So that you throw away, because that's not metame, and there's no problem of moving tuma. Miniachat hasfekot, anything that might be part of the body, you leave there together with the body. And ashar, things that are definitely part of the mate that are still identifiable. So all of that is tamei vadai, and that would be mitstarev to whatever the shear is, rov binyano, or Rov Minyono, or Rov Atzomot, or, now this is very problematic, or L'Melotar Vad Rekev. Now that's ridiculous. You cannot have Melotar Vad Rekev if you have any chips of wood. Remember, we said that the only time that you have Rekav HaMeit is Heichidomi Rekav HaMeit, that you buried the mate completely without any begodim, and you buried him in an Aron Shel Shayish, so that there would be nothing that could have contaminated the kever. So here we're talking about throwing out screws and nails and wood chips, and we're going to say it's Rekav HaMeit? That's crazy. How is that possible? So, I mean, personally, I personally believe that the meaning is in the event that this was a set, it's not that all of this is one case. Throw out the chips, but keep the rekav. That is indeed impossible. But the correct is that, okay, if you had a case where there were chips, if you had a case where there were screws and nails, if you have a case where there's nothing but rekav, it doesn't necessarily mean it's all one case. Okay, but nobody agrees with me. So we'll look at what those who know what they're talking about say. So the Rosh says, okay, so maybe it would be talking about, I mean, I must say it's, does not sound like a very good answer. But maybe it's talking about where the mate had originally been buried in this Aron Shel Shayish, and then the Aron Shel Shayish cracked open in an earthquake, and now we've got Rekav that would have been Rekav, but now it's mixed up with all the other dirt that was under the Kever, and so on and so forth, and that's what it's referring to. Okay, anyway, you know, you can make your own choice over here, you know, and decide which pirish you like. Okay, I mean, some go all the way and say, wow, this braisa is chaylik on Alamesh Mi Sinai of Rekav HaMeit only being in the case of Aron Shel Shayish. I mean, oh boy. Okay, anyway, so we don't see a word over here about Shalosh Etzbot. Where in the world would Reb Elazar come off making up a new halacha that the Tana knows nothing about? Answers the Gemara, because there's another Shita. Hudi Amar Ki Hai Tana, Enachinami. Reb Elazar ben Pedat was not going according to this Braita, despite the fact that it's his namesake, Reb Elazar ben Tzadok, and that did not in any way bend his mind. No, siree. He paskin like the other Braita, which says like this, Kamashir Tfusa, Om Reb Yochanan Mishum ben Azai, word for word, what Reb Elazar said. Notel afartichoach, chofer bibetula, shalosh etzbaot, and that's it. Okay, so then that's what we're talking about. All right, the next thing. So this now finishes the first part of the Mishnah. Now we go on to talk about the bodek hemeno, esrim ama, and so on and so forth. That you should just be aware of the fact that this is an extremely difficult sugya in its makom. So where the Gemara goes into it in detail, and the Mishnayos go into it in detail, there's a lot of different shitas, and there's all kinds of different ways to carry on this batika. There's the questions of the diagonals, which the Gemara, our Gemara and our Mishnah has not discussed. What about the increased length of the diagonal, in which how can you be sure? And stuff like that. The question of whether we're talking about adults or children. Again, to our sugya, I think that the only part that's important was the linkage of the raglayim ledover for shkunas kever to the raglayim ledover for tumas hatahom. And that's why we brought it up over here. And we'll see that this is a pattern that continues on further. So, I'm not going to go into the detail here. The Gemara doesn't go into the detail. I don't see any reason why we should. Omar Rava. So suppose a guy was badak. He found this body and he moved it correctly, together with its tfusa, and then he was going through his field again, and he found another body. Oh, okay. So he moved that body as well, with its tfusa, which you're allowed to do, as long as there's two. Then he's still plowing up his field, and he bumps into a third body. So now what happens? So then the din is like this. He can't move the third body, but he can't move those two bodies that he moved back into where they were. Even though l'chatchila, he wasn't supposed to move them. But he didn't know that, because we didn't establish this to be a shkunas kvaros yet. And so because of that, what he did was done beheter. And therefore, he doesn't need to bring them back. Because as long as, I mean, adarab, it's better not to, because in the sense that the more that you're disturbing the remains, the less covet there is for the mate. So you don't have to bring back this other one, but you certainly can't take away the third one if it was in a real kever that was kavua there from before. Ikini Amri Omar Rava. Whereas there's another shita that says that actually what Rava says was, once you had the right to move the first two mesim, then you can move even the third mace, because now you've moved the entire Beit HaKvarot, so to speak, to a new place. But why? What happened to the din of Shkunat Kvarot? Why don't we have to call this entire place a Shkunat Kvarot? Omer Reish Lakish, because, look, basically remember that the din of Shkunat Kvarot is talking about a halacha that deals with a suffix, correct? The whole deal is a din in suffix. But once we know that we've taken away already two out of the three metim, so then, I'm not going to be machmer on the suffix. Why? Because Omer Reish Lakish, Ila Matzeu V'Tiaru Eretz Yisrael. We have a general klal that wherever it is possible to remove Tuma from Eretz Yisrael, and it's mutter, we do. So once we've reduced this back to the original situation, which we have a single mate, even though we say that this was a Shkunat Kvarot, we don't apply the din of a suffix of Shkunat Kvarot when we know we've already moved the majority of the Meitim that we know about. So it's a big kula. If it was a Shkunat Kvarot, so then, of course, the Mishnah said that you have to check Esrim Amah. So what would be the din if you checked Esrim Amah and you didn't find anything? Because, I mean, normally a shkunat kvarot is not one ma'ara. It's like the whole area is full of these ma'arot. So does that change, like, what it was before? Or do we say that you can actually assume that the first ones were a small shkunat kvarot, you cannot move them, and you don't have to worry about anything else? Omer Rav Menashe bar Yirmiya Omer Rav, it is a shkunat kvarot. Now, if you learn that that means that you still have to worry that you have all of the dinim of the Esrim Amma, shkunat kvarot, then the next piece doesn't make sense. And in fact, many take out the next piece. So then you can't say, why are we maker? We're not maker. We're machmer. My taima, Omer Reish Lakish Ila Matzu V'Tiyaru L'Eretz Yisrael. That's ridiculous. He's saying that it is a shkunat kvarot. However, if we understand, this is where the Rambam paskins, that Rav Menashe bar Yirmiya is saying that the original three bodies constitutes the shkunat kvarot. And that's all you need to worry about. Why? Because of the fact that if we can say, well, listen, you dug a lot of exploratory digs. I mean, we could say, what do you mean? Did you bulldoze the whole place? Are you absolutely sure? No, I'm not. But why is that I don't have to check? Because the same reason that Reish Lakish said before, Ilam Matzu, we're always happy to be Metayer Eretz Yisrael. If we have an excuse, then we want to be Metayer Eretz Yisrael, and we're not going to be Machmer to have an extensive Shkunat Kvarot if we've been able to check it out, and we see that we haven't found anything out. So this is Nogea, the Dinim of Raglayim LeDavar, which appears so far in the Sugya of Tumas Tom, and in the Sugya of the Tuma of Shkunat Kfarot. Our next Mishnah, which will be introduced by our very own sonar, radar, sensitive, and actually our own Kapitan has figured out how to do a Bedika on Shkunat Kfarot without even digging. Yes, indeed. Ground-penetrating radar is one of his ways to do things without having to work. He took Rabbi Akiva's words to Rabbi Yosheva very much to heart, Richie, and he doesn't do any work. So,
no,
it,
as little as possible.
Exactly. So this Mishnah is going to introduce a Raglayim LeDavar issue that is part of a different suffix, a suffix that isn't really very nogea, directly Naziris, but of course we've had many cases of a Nazir who is a Mitzera, and he cannot be Mitzahir, because of his suffix. Okay, so this Mishnah discusses that as well in terms, as we'll see also, ultimately, having a Raglayim LeDavar. Kol Sefek Nigaim Batchila Tohor. So the din is that if up front we've got a concept of we'll see that the next Mishnah is where the Raglayim LeDavar comes up. So if we have a suffix up front, and we haven't yet established that this person is a Mitzera Muchlad, then if we don't have to worry about the fact that it was already defined as Tumei, it's Tohar. But this is only Ad Shelo Nizkak L'Tumah. This is before the Kohen said, Beferish, that there is Tuma there. Okay, so the Mishnah, remember we learned this Mishnah together in the Goyim. And what happened is that we had two people come. The two people each have a nega that requires Hezger. But they're of different sizes. One of them has a nega the size of a gris, which is the minimal size. And one of them has a larger nega the size of a sela. They both come to a Kohen. The Kohen puts them into Hezger to see if there's any spreading. There's no Simone Tuma, so therefore there's not going to be anything other than to wait until we see if there's Kasa. They come back a week later, and now both of these people present the Nega the size of a Sela. The problem is that nobody recalls who was the one that had the Sela originally, and who was the one that had the grits? Now, we definitely know that somebody's Nega has spread, but since this was out of Hezger, And we never had a cheskas chilot on either of these. So this is considered to be bitchila. And if that's the case, that's always going to be lakula. By the way, you'll recall that in the Mishnah, we go much further than that. It turns out to be a machlokas, but the Chachamim, they say even if these two negoim are on the same person, and we don't remember, the Kohen doesn't, he lost his notebook, and he does not remember which of the two negoim was the one that was Kisela originally, so then it has to also be that he's going to be Metame Vitimei HaKohen Et HaNega. And if he can't identify the nega that he's being metame, then it's going to be a suffix, which is tohar. And it's still, even if it's on the same person, we will not say, well, he's vadai tome because he definitely has a nega that was pasa. The Kohen has to be able to identify the nega that was pasa. Fine. Anyway, if he was already nizkak letumah, but once we talk about a case of chilut, and now the question is that we had a chilut, and both of these two people were pasa. And then, afterwards, both of them shrink back. But one of them was a sela before, and therefore when it's a sela now, he's cured. But the other one was only a kagris before, and now it's still a sela, and it hasn't shrunk back to the original size, and therefore he isn't tahar. So since over here in this case, we already had a chazaka that the Kohen said you're tamei bevadai, and now we're trying to make sure that you're cured. We cannot make sure that you're cured in this case. So once you're nizkak letuma, in that case, the suffix is tamei. So minane mile, how do we know that lechatchila we're going to be mekel? Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav, the pasuk says, letaharo o letamo. First, the Torah says, your first assumption is letaharo. And only then, if you have strong grounds, you can say letamo. So, ho'elu patach ha-katuv betahara techila. It's a remez that things are meant to be tohar unless proven otherwise. Wait a minute, says the Gemara. I mean, that sounds like a very woke kind of assumption over here. I mean, if you're going to tell me that we're always supposed to look for tahara, so why wouldn't that be true even in a case where there was already nizkak letumah? So yochi afil nizmishan nizkak letumah namisveko tahar. You're claiming that it's actually a pasuk. I mean, so then what's the nafkamina? Okay, you're right. It isn't really from here. The Gemara never does explain, if it isn't really from here, then where is it from? The Gemara doesn't go into that, but the Rush actually brings the drasha from the Teras Koyanim, and it's from Vitimei Oto, which is a Tavadai Humetamei, and it also is Derish, that Vitiher Oto. So each one of them is es Havadai. Avadayu mitaher ve'inu matayer tasafek, and mitimeyet avadai ve'inu mitameyet tasafek. So there you have the difference between betchila or not betchila. Okay, our Gemara is not concerned, where do we know it from? Our Gemara is concerned with, but what about this beautiful, very woke-sounding, we got to use that somewhere, right? I mean, somebody's got to post it on Twitter at least. So what did that mean? I mean, it had to mean something, Rav Yehuda Amar Rav's drasha. It's so beautiful. So what is that coming to tell me? Elaki Itmar, that pasuk was actually referring to the famous Mishnah, also in the Goyim, and it goes like this. Im baheret kadma l'sear lavan tameh. Then tohar. Okay, so you know this halacha. That's very simple. In order for a simen tuma, and one of the simonim of tuma, is that the nega turned the dark hair that was in the space of the nega, turned the hair white. That's a sign that is just as good as pasa, and if it's there as soon as he comes to the kohen, then he's automatically mukhlat. We don't need to be mazgir if we see that it turned, that there was a presence already of a simen tuma. But what if the hair was white before? Then obviously it's not a simen tuma. It's hafach lavan. It's only if it was turned it into white hair. but not if it was white hair. But what if you're not sure? How about if it was a Suffolk? I don't know whether it turned white after we had the Bayeret or it was white before and then the Bayeret came along. So I'm not sure. Is it Tomei or is it Tar? So what's the din? So Rabbi Yeshua says, Keha. You remember that funny Lashon, Keha. What does Keha mean? I mean, it isn't Keha. Keha is like just taking the pasuk that uses Im Keha Nega, that when the Nega changes colors and it no longer is Metame. So he's like really into the tech talk of the dinim of Tzaraz. So instead of saying straight out, it's Tar, he says, yep, it's a Keha case. Okay. So it's obviously very much a borrowed term. So what do you mean when you say Keha? No, it says Rabbi Yeshua meant it's Tahar, Keha v'Tahar. I mean, Keha doesn't mean anything. Look, and somebody wants to make up his own tech talk, you know. Maybe it means it's Keha and it's Tameh. I mean, obviously that doesn't make any sense. Well, how would it be Tameh if it's more Keha? But, I mean, that's exactly the point. Sort of slap across the face. I mean, you say it means Keha and it's Tameh. I say it means Keha and it's Tar. I say maybe it means Keha and it's Tameh. So I don't get, like, what you're saying. So v'dilma Keha v'Tameh. Actually, this we learn out from this beautiful drasha, which is l'taro l'tamo, ho'elu patach bo ha'katuv b'tchila, in terms of tara. Therefore, we always take and understand Rabbi Yeshua to mean that it's tahor.